720 WGN. Good evening. I'm John Landecker. Thanks for tuning in. It's 10 minutes after 7 o'clock. Now, that example there that was in the middle of the jingle, take this job and shove it, that is not what I would call an example of quiet quitting. No, that would be yelling, I'm leaving. The reason I bring that up is we're going to talk right now to Julie Bauke, who's the president and chief career strategist at the Bauke Group, and also, I'm happy to add, the author of the book, Stop Peeing on Your Shoes, Avoiding the 7 Mistakes That Screw Up Your Job Search. You know, anybody that comes up with that kind of title, Julie, is okay in my book.
Let me tell you. Right.
Oh, no. No problem. So, we've contacted Julie to discuss this thing that's called quiet quitting, which the more I read about it, hear about it, the more I just roll my eyes and go, who the heck ever thought this up? Where did this come from? I mean, where did it come from?
It's a very misleading phrase. You know, it makes it sound like, you know, you pull the covers over your head and never show up again. But which, you know, I guess some people do. But what it really means is setting, the way I interpret it is setting boundaries for yourself. You know, saying, I'm going to do my job. I'm going to do a good job. But I'm going to set boundaries. I'm not going to do the jobs of 2 people or 3 people, which unfortunately in this market, with a lot of organizations not being able to fill their open positions, the extra work has fallen back on the people who are already there. And it's getting to be too much for a lot of people, and they're just setting boundaries for what they'll do.
Well, I was reading an article from Business Insider about quiet quitting and also quiet firing.
Yeah.
And it said here that this term, the quitting part of it, took off on TikTok among millennials and Gen Zers, referring to employees doing what their job expects of them and not offering to do more than what they get paid to do, which is, I suppose, a different way of saying what you just said. But to me, it's like, how do I say this? I come from a different era, obviously. I did not have to deal with the pandemic and initially when I was young, you know, I mean, I've been working for a long time. I worked remotely during the pandemic. But if I was a young person, or, you know, a Zer or a millennial or whatever, and I'm working remotely and I find that, you know what, this is less stressful and I don't have to commute and all of that, I'd like to keep doing this. That part of all of this, I sort of understand, you know. I mean, that's easier for me to understand than someone who just says, well, there's so much work to do, I'm not going to do anything more than's required of me in the job description.
Well, you know, you and I think, are both boomers, and we came of age in a workplace that was so different than what the younger generations are coming into. And we, you know, I remember this, as I'm sure you do. You showed up and you did what you were told, and you did it as long as you could. And you know, the whole workforce or career strategy was get one job, get your job, hang on to it, hopefully if you're lucky for 40 years, then retire, and then you can start having fun. And that all started to fall apart in the 90s when mass layoffs started.
Yes.
And people started realizing that loyalty does not exist. And it really never did, but we had that notion that it did because there really weren't layoffs. I mean, you had to do something really bad to lose your job. And so our relationship with work started to fray in the 90s. And, you know, our kids started to see that, wow, you know, work can be not a good thing. And you can lose your job, and that's devastating. And so it's just been changing. Our relationship with work has been changing drastically the last couple of decades. And, you know, so layoffs started in mass in the 90s, and they've continued. Then you look at 2008, when we had this horrible recession, and companies had to move to not just cutting the fat, but cutting the muscle and cutting the bone. And so really good workers who gave their all, who thought they were safe from a layoff and always had been safe from a layoff, started to get laid off. And so this security that anybody felt, whether it was false or not, again, frayed further. And people started to say, wait a minute, you know, my company is, my company cares about me until the day they don't. And it's time for me, right?
Yeah, that's true. So true. So true.
Yeah. So it's time for me to start acting accordingly and starting to look out for myself, my health, my well-being, sectors of my life that aren't necessarily the work sectors.
Right.
And it's just, this has picked up steam. And now we've got millennials, and only the tip of Gen Z is in the workforce so far. You know, they're still very young, a lot of them, and they aren't in the workforce yet. But this train has picked up steam, and it is not going to slow down. And so this relationship with work that these younger people have is, I want to be healthy. I want to have relationships. I want to have fun. I don't want to wait until I'm 65 years old to have fun and travel. And so they are saying, yeah, I'm not going to work 60 to 80 hours a week just because you can't fill these open positions. Because guess what, John? You know as well as I do, your best employees, the people who do the most, they're the ones who get piled on the most. The slackers, the people who kind of slack off, nobody takes them work because they won't get it done. And so the good people end up getting piled on, and they don't typically get any sort of, you know, remuneration or bonus for it. It's just, you know, a pat on the head, keep it up. And, you know, I think that a lot of people have said in a nice way, take this job and shove it. And sometimes in a not so nice way, what, not quiet quitting, but noisy quitting. They're just saying, you know what, I'm going to do my job and I'm going to be valuable and I'm going to work hard, but I'm not going to do the jobs of two people and I'm going to draw the line. And, you know, I think other generations can learn from that to some extent.
Oh, yeah. And participate in quiet quitting. 720 WGN at 721 with John Landecker. We're talking to Julie Balke, who is the president and chief career strategist at the Balke Group. And we're talking about quiet quitting, which is, first of all, not quitting. Is it? I mean,
right.
Is it?
No.
No, then
no.
Why is it? Why is it called that then?
Because, like, you know, that's just clickbait. I think it just it's to get you to inspect it, listen to it, react to it. You know, yeah, no, it's not quitting. It's just pulling back to a reasonable level. And then, but you know what? You decide what's a reasonable level of work for you. Your employer gets to decide if your level of reasonable is good enough for them. So there's a risk to it too.
And but I mean, when you go for a job interview or do it over virtual media, social platforms, aren't the responsibilities of the job part of the process? You're being told what it is that you're going to be doing and what it is that's expected of you. Isn't that still true?
It is, but I think it is generally very vague, and it's still left to be sort of, you know, TBD as you get into the job. So if you're in a job, let's say there's four people that normally do this particular job. There are two open positions out of that four. Two people have quit and gone to other companies. They joined the Great Resignation, and now there's two people left to do the work of four. And so your company, a lot of times, will be like, well, you know, we need you to pick up the slack over here, take this extra, do this, do that. And all of a sudden, this job that you signed up for is, you know, it has expanded greatly in scope and expectation. And then, of course, the problem is, if you do a really good job of picking up the slack for those two open positions, the company then says, well, wait a minute, why do we need to hire these two other people? We can close those requisitions because apparently you can do the job of two.
Well, I know all about that philosophy. There was a portion in the, you were talking about the 90s, know, and in my business of broadcasting, there was legislation passed that allowed one broadcast company to own, I don't know how many thousands and thousands of radio stations. So they bought them all. Then what did they do? They consolidated them into group clusters. If they had four stations that they owned and used to have, just for example, four general managers, all of a sudden they only needed one because yep. it took just one manager to run all those four stations, according to this new right. business plan. So I understand totally what that's about.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So I get the idea that people could be ticked off about being asked to do more than was required, especially if they don't feel that they're getting any positive feedback, whether it's support, money, vacation days, I don't know, whatever. But what's quiet firing then? I mean, if we have quiet, because that's another term I'm looking at here, quiet quitting and quiet firing. How does that work?
That's even a bigger eye roll. What it is really passive aggressive management.
So
the definition of quiet firing is there's a couple things that I've read that they say qualify as this quiet firing. One is ignoring your mediocre people until they quit, freeze them out, which is just chicken, no backbone leadership. And the other is people who are these high performers are saying, well, wait a minute. If I'm doing all these great things and you're telling me I'm doing all these great things, but you're not recognizing me for it, giving me a bonus when it's raise time, you're not giving me a raise. In other words, you're not showing me that you're valuing me. I'm taking that as you don't really want me here anymore. And so it's kind of a stretch. And again, the eye roll, but it's really, we have those of us who've been, those people, your listeners who've been in corporate America, know that there's not a lack of bad leadership in corporate America. It is people, and what we're in the middle of. So management leadership has always been very top down. I have a bigger job. I have a bigger office. I will tell you what to do. And these younger generations are saying, you know what? We want you to talk to us, work with us. And don't talk at us, talk with us, collaborate with us. We want to respect you. We don't want to do what you say just because you're our boss. We want to respect you. And they're looking for something different from work. And a lot of organizations have not hired, promoted, and trained their managers to lead that way. And so that's why there's this exodus of people looking for better leadership, better culture. Two-thirds to three-quarters of people leave their jobs, not because they can't do the job, not because of pay, and not because they don't like the job. It's because they are not a fit in that culture, and it generally gets down to bad communication, poor management, and really a lack of respect, for the values of the organization. Two-thirds to three-quarters, and that goes across generations. That's not just the younger generations.
Do you know from your research if these people have another job lined up when they do that, or are they just willing to bail without a parachute, so to speak?
So that is so interesting. So I've been doing this for 25 years, and so I have seen all. I always say I feel like I've seen it all, but then I learn I haven't. But in general, isn't that life? Well, and a very interesting stat from the last couple of years was that 21% of people changed jobs last year, and 26% of that 21% regret their change, their move. And part of it is, so why? Part of it is some of those people quit without another job lined up.
Right.
They believed the headlines and thought the minute they quit, there'd be 10 offers lined up. And they found that it takes a while to find a job. It definitely takes a while to find the right job. It's a process. And so there were some group of people that said, literally take this job and shove it, walked out the door, and it took them longer to find something else than they thought it was going to. The other part of those people who had regret were people who jumped at, they chased a shiny object. So pay, time and time again, for decades, has shown not to be a motivator. It can be a dissatisfier, but when it comes to what people want from work, it's in the middle of the pack.
Wow.
Now, if you're underpaying people, that's definitely going to cause some problems. But if you're to continue to throw money at people, which is what recruiters and other companies have been doing the last couple of years in order to pick off talent, if I am chased by a shiny object, and that shiny object is a 20% increase, I'm super giddy. I'm so excited. I'm thinking about my Lambo I'm going to buy. And then I get there, and I go, oh, crap. So 20% more isn't making me happy because I like this job, less than I liked my last job. And so they regret jumping for the wrong reason. And that's what we see over and over again. And that's one of the mistakes in my book is starting a job search without knowing what you're looking for. And so it's really easy to get pulled by money. But so many times, as people will tell you, the thing that made them unhappy, it wasn't money.
Right.
And so there are people who jump for the wrong reason.
The expression money can't buy happiness has always been around for generations. Julie, we're out of time. It's been great talking to you, though, and all the best. Thank you so much for being with us.
All right. Thanks, John.
All right.
Take care.
You betcha.